Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, fair enough. Well, there we go. There we go. We got started so that Mario can leave and go do her Thanksgiving shopping. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Make Me Smart on a Wednesday today. We're doing what we can to make today make sense. Molly's out. Mario Segarra is in. Hey.
Yeah. Hi.
Okay, so this is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We answer your questions. Everybody learns a little bit. So let us begin, shall we?
Yeah, we're starting today with a question about the Dow. Here it is.
This is Ala in Oakland. My question is 30,000 what? This is the same question I had when the Dow hit 10,000 back in the day and people lost their damn minds. What does that number represent? Is it a dollar figure?
Oh, man.
Is it a count of some sort? Is it some sort of aggregate?
Yes, that last part. That is awesome. So first of all, please don't lose your mind because the Dow hit 30,000. The Dow hitting 30,000 means the Dow hit 30,000. That's all that means. What is the Dow? It is not a dollar amount. It is an aggregate of the prices of each of the companies listed in the Dow Jones Industrials. That is to say 30 companies. It is a price-weighted index, which means that companies that have higher share prices, and a good go-to example used to be Boeing before it got into so much trouble. But Boeing was far and away the most expensive stock in the Dow, and it was like $450 just like 18 months ago. And so when Boeing stock hiccuped, the whole average went kerflooey because it is price-weighted. Okay, so what they do is they take the prices of all the shares of all the companies in the Dow, all 30 of them, add them up, do a little math, and presto changeo, out the other end comes 30,000. You don't worry about what it's denominated in. You don't worry about anything as to what it exactly means. It's all relative, right? So if the Dow's up a percent or down a percent, that's the thing you got to know. And that's really the primer on the Dow, right? And here's it. One more thing. Much like the stock market is not the economy, so too the Dow Jones Industrial Average is not the stock market, right? It is 30 lousy companies. Which tells you something about where some significant companies in the market are headed, in the economy are headed, but it doesn't tell you the whole thing. It's not broad. It's not largely representative. It's just there, and it's so famous because it's so old, right? I mean, it's been around 100 years. That's my spiel on the Dow.
You know, I'm really grateful for this question, actually, because it's something that we all just take for granted, I think. Mm-hmm, and if you're listening to business news, sometimes it's like, what does that mean? You know, I like these opportunities to just sort of dig in and answer the simple things.
No, totally true. Totally true and totally important. And we gloss over it because it's become internalized, actually, for those of us who deal with this stuff every day. Here we go. Danny in Kansas. Here's what he says. What will the tax burden for those of us who have received unemployment benefits during the pandemic be? Wow.
Yeah, so you will have to pay taxes on you have to pay federal and in many cases state income taxes on the money you get in unemployment. Some states do waive that. California and Alabama, you don't have to pay income taxes on your unemployment. But in any case, the taxes you do have to pay are not automatically withheld. You have to opt into it by filling out a form you can get on the IRS website, as if anybody knows to do that. And then you give the form to the agency, your state agency. And if you don't do that, then you'll have to settle up with the government, which means a bigger tax bill or a smaller refund in April or whenever the government decides to hold tax day next year. I mean, this year they extended it, so.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, I will tell you what. So please consult your own tax professionals because this is real-world financial implication stuff. But I will share with everybody listening to this podcast that there is nothing that terrifies me more than taxes. And it goes like this. My wife is, for very good reason, in charge of all the money in our house. I'm not good with money. I spend it. It's much better that she's in charge of it. But somehow, and I don't know how this happened, but somehow I have become the guy who does the paperwork for our accountants to do the taxes. And every year in the first week of April, I get all kinds of stress because I'm sure I'm missing some document or some form or I filled out something wrong. And finally, we get them all to the accountant and he calls us back and he says, you owe XYZ or you're getting XYZ back. And I breathe a huge sigh of relief because there is nothing worse. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Little moment of sharing. Me and my taxes.
Yeah. I mean, I do my own taxes by hand. My tax situation is probably a little simpler than many, but I think if you really, once you really dig into it, it can be kind of fun.
Oh my goodness. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No.
Adding everything up and at the end
what if it doesn't add up? And what if you need a piece of paper that you don't have? And what? No. It's such a stressor for me. I hate it.
Well, little trick is TurboTax and those online software, you don't have to pay for the federal part of it unless you actually file with them. So you can do your own taxes by hand and then you fill it out on TurboTax and just see what number they come up with and kind of check it.
All right. Okay. So very quick story, and I think I've told it on this podcast before, but it's a good one. So early on in our marriage, like 3 kids ago, right? We did the TurboTax thing. And so we sat down first week of April, whatever, and fired up the computer and went through everything and got through our TurboTax. And we got to a question on the alternative minimum tax. And the way it worked back then, and granted, this was 20 years ago, right? Was the computer asked you whether you thought you were subject to the alternative minimum tax. And without thinking, I just clicked on no. And my wife said, what are you doing? How do you know you're not subject to the alternative minimum tax? And I said, I don't know, but I don't want to be, so I'm going to click no. And that's not the move, but whatever. So that was the year we decided to get an accountant. True story.
Yeah, that's probably a good decision then.
All right. Anyway, so to Twitter for this next question, and here's the deal. Matt Black wanted to know about what happened last week with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Jay Powell. So Mnuchin, the outgoing Secretary of the Treasury, and Jay Powell, the Fed chair, have worked really closely together for 3 years, whatever, 2 years that Powell's been chair. And Mnuchin said at the end of last week, listen, I'm going to take back $450 billion in CARES Act money that you, the Fed, had been using to backstop a bunch of loans to businesses in this economy. And Powell, it became clear, was not pleased with that. And he said, I'll do it, but only because you say the law says that you have to do this. And so what Matt Black wanted to know on Twitter was, would something like this by Treasury be normal or not normal in a transition? And really, it's so not normal. In addition to many other things that the outgoing administration is doing to handicap the incoming Biden administration, this is hugely not normal because what it has effectively done by taking this money back and putting it into the Treasury's general fund, Secretary Mnuchin has left the incoming Treasury Secretary, who we believe is going to be Janet Yellen, the former Fed chair, and I know this all gets confusing and, revolving door-wise, it leaves her with not a whole lot of options to support the Federal Reserve without having to go back to Congress and ask for more money. And as we all know, regular listeners to Marketplace or readers of newspapers or websites or anything will know, Congress has not been forthcoming with more aid for this economy since March. So Yellen and Powell are kind of in a jam because Mnuchin decided to do this very not normal thing on the way out,
Yeah. Yeah, well, so I mean—
lots of not normal.
That same topic, actually, we got this other voice memo from Ariana from Minnesota.
With the announcement of Janet Yellen as Joe Biden's potential pick for Treasury Secretary, I'm wondering if you can help make me smart on the difference between Treasury Secretary and Chair of the Fed. I'm not really sure I know the difference yet. Any help you can provide would be great. Thanks.
That is such a
good
question.
you want to take the first part of that?
Sure. So the main difference is, well, God, there's so many. I'll just give you the top level ones. The main difference is that the Treasury Secretary is part of the administration. That is to say, he or she now will be perceived as and has a partisan policy role to play. The chair of the Federal Reserve, while appointed by a president, leads an independent agency. That's the way the Federal Reserve system was set up in 1913. That's the way it's been ever since. That we want our monetary policy, that is to say, what the Federal Reserve does, to be independent from politics. You want them to do the best thing for the economy, separate and apart from who the administration is, right? Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, these two are supposed to work together, especially in recessions, right? To borrow money, to fight the recessions, to bail out institutions. But sometimes the two are at odds, as they are right now, with the Treasury Secretary and the Fed Chair. I will add a historical note here that shows how intertwined these roles can be. Alexander Hamilton, America's first Treasury Secretary, also created this country's first central bank, which laid the foundation for the Fed we know today. And I will admit, I did learn that by watching Hamilton.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
It was
that's
informative.
That's a great, yes, totally. That's a great bit of financial trivia. I love that. And I love that you remembered it. I forgot. That's awesome.
I was listening to Hamilton songs just before this. Like literally leading up and taping this.
I probably
great.
Should. Sorry, wait. One last quick substantive thing, right? So not only are their roles different, but what they do is different. The Federal Reserve is in charge of what's called monetary policy, interest rates. And that's really their main device. That's their primary tool for influencing this economy, right? They can do some other things in a crisis like these lending programs that we've talked about. But mainly it's raising and lowering interest rates that give the Fed its power over the economy. And it's a huge amount of power. The Treasury Secretary has far broader policy responsibilities, right? Everything from international cooperation to taxes to regulation. But the powers are, more, while substantive, are more diffuse, right? Jay Powell, in a meeting, can say, we're going to raise the federal funds rate, 50 basis points, half percentage point, and everybody's going to go bananas. There are a few things that Janet Yellen will be able to say in one meeting that would make everybody go bananas. So it's a different kind of power structure, complementary, as Marielle said. Anyway, I'm done. That's just a whole lot of Kai blather.
You know, I wonder how – we always talk about how Fed chairs communicate. Like, what is Janet Yellen thinking? I wonder how way that she speaks is going to change now that she's Treasury Secretary rather than Fed chair.
That is such a good question because, look, she is really thoughtful and deliberate. And when she speaks and when you interview her, she takes her time and she makes cogent arguments. She does not do, political speech or wonkiness or any – well, she does a lot of wonkiness. But she doesn't do like what you typically hear coming out of political policy people's mouths. So that's a really good thing to watch, actually. There's a story there to do, I think, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, there we go. That was kind of a quick bang zoom. What do you want to know Wednesday? More questions, please, and comments. Make me smart at marketplace.org. I will say, by the way, we listen to them all. We read them all. We can't get them on the pod, all of them, but we try. What else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. We're out tomorrow. We're out Friday. I think Molly's back on Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask. And Marielle, you have to get to the store because I don't know what you're thinking, waiting till 6:45 New York time before Thanksgiving to go get something to cook tomorrow. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a soup dumpling Thanksgiving. I'm serious. I give up.
It's all good.
It's been a long week. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by the wonderful Marissa Cabrera. The also wonderful Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ethan Peretz is our, I guess I'll just keep going with this, wonderful intern. And Erica Phillips, also wonderful, writes our newsletters and smart speaker skill.
The entirely average Garrett Lang engineered today's program. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez, they're fine. They can post the theme music. Donna Dam, she is wonderful. She's a senior producer. Sitar Nieves, well, look, she does something. I don't even know.
She's the best.
She's all right. We'll let her keep saying it. Oh, man. Well, there we go. Boom.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.